Hey, Ryan, I was just looking at your book today. It's your first book. It's called Be Intolerant, yeah. Which is it's a pretty aggressive subtitle. But I want people to hear what not only the title is, but the subtitle is, because some things are just stupid. So, you know, it's an attention getter just looking at the book.
Yeah.
Tell us what prompted you to write that.
That was me right out of the gate. You know, the title I thought was funny. You know, I didn't think people would take it that seriously, but they did. I mean, people got so mad over the title. They were just furious. I was canceled from an event in Canada by a guy. A lawyer put on a protest and had me canceled off of a bill. And he said openly, I've not read the book. He had never read one chapter of it. He just saw the title and was so offended by it. That they canceled me on, that he had a protest to cancel me. And I thought, you know, you should probably read it. Like, you know, you're an attorney, you went to law school, but this makes you look a little bit dumb. You know, I wrote the book based on a conversation I had at a Christian school. I'd been to a school to speak, and I was talking, I spoke on that Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, and no one gets to the Father but through him. And afterwards, when I was done, this little girl came up and we were talking, and she said, I don't think it's fair that you say Jesus is the only way to heaven. And I thought she was kidding. And I laughed. And then you get that look that your wife can give you or your girlfriend can give you, and you know you're in trouble. And then I blurted out, oh, my goodness, you're serious. And I said it way too loud. And, and she was like, yeah. And I said, well, you know, do you read the Bible? And she said, yeah. I said, have you read, you know, all of it? And she was like, no, not all of it. She's like, but I think Jesus is love. And I said, well, yeah, I think he's love too. And she goes, oh, okay, good. And she turned around and walked away. And I thought, you know, I'm at a Christian school. They have a Bible class every single day, 5 days a week. This girl is like a sophomore in high school, 2 years, you know, of this, and still thinks that there's many roads to heaven. And I just thought, you know, we've got to start standing up for right and wrong. And, you know, as I get older, you know, you look at the current administration and the state that our country is in, you know, I mean, my own hometown, Colorado Springs, is going crazy. The government is just nuts here. They wanted to raise taxes, and we said, no, we don't want to raise taxes. So they've now cut off. They don't fix potholes. They've turned off every third streetlight. They've stopped putting trash cans in parks. And the minimum, it used to be like you'd pay by the yard to take trash to the dump. You know, like we cleaned out our backyard last week in preparation for spring. I have a Honda Ridgeline. It's the tiniest truck bed on a truck. I mean, it's so little. It used to cost me about $12, $13 to take it to the dump. And the minimum now is $50 because they're just trying to gouge, you know, people.
No kidding. They're trying to get it somehow.
I just want to tell people you got to stand up for right and wrong. They're extorting you. You know, and with the streetlights, like we live in a cul-de-sac, they turned ours off. But if we give the city as a collective cul-de-sac $75 total, they'll turn it back on. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. You had a crew of five guys that came out with a cherry picker crane to take the light bulb out of my street light. I'm positive at union wages, you're spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars to get that done, but somehow my $75 is going to turn it back on. That's wrong, and that's what Be Intolerant was all about, standing up for right and wrong, be it in public sector, in morality, in private life, in public life, of not being afraid of taking on issues and being, it's okay to be right. Don't be a jerk about it, but it's okay to be right and have answers.
Well, let's talk about that. When it comes to lifestyle or doctrinal compromise, are you seeing trends that alarm you among Christians?
Oh, my goodness, Skip. Yeah, you know, this is the hard part. I don't want to be the sky is falling Christian. You know what I mean? Oh, you know, we're all going to hell in a handbasket. You know, let's just wait and pray for Jesus. That's not my mode. But, I mean, I've seen pastors, there's a very famous pastor that went on TV and the interviewer said, are you telling me that Christ is the only way to heaven? And he had this big grin on his face and he goes, well, let's just say he's the best way.
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
I know, I don't want to.
Yeah, I got you.
But you know what I mean?
Right.
I think, who goes to your church and how do you look yourself in the mirror after an interview like that? I don't understand that. I mean, you know, the moral relative, and, you know, people ask me, you know, how to get here. And I'm like, well, it's not that somebody sat your children down and they systematically explained how the Bible is a fairy tale and there really is no Jesus and how evolution is a scientifically proven fact. And they really just explained it to your kids. Your kids were like, wow, that's really true. That's amazing. And I no longer believe Jesus. It's that whispering in your ear over 15, 20, 25 years, the culture that does it. You know, yes. The biggest age group that I'm having a hard time with now isn't junior high and high school. It's college, late college, and then that late 20s, early 30s. I'm finding so many late 20s, early 30s that their first resort in a bad relationship is divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that used to be so taboo.
Right.
You know? And I'm speaking from somebody that's been through a divorce. So, you know, I go from it. You know, it was taboo, something that was the absolutely last option. You would, you know, do everything possible not to go through the embarrassment or the shame of being a Christian in a church and going through a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there was infidelity, of course, if there was abuse, you know, there's things like that. But now, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, we just don't get along. And, you know, it's going to be better for the kids if they don't see mommy and daddy fighting. And it's just like the first choice people make is divorce.
Wow.
It's all across the board. I don't understand it.
Yeah, you even mentioned, and I just want to get back to it, about, you know, preachers that are on TV. Do you think a lot of this problem, I heard it put this way, that a mist in the pulpit is a fog in the pew, that if there's no strong clarion teaching and
yeah.
equipping of worldviews from a pulpit, you
yep.
certainly can't expect people to go out and live anything they're ambiguous about.
That's right. If your church is essentially Dr. Phil with a seminary degree, or for some, an accounting degree, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just pop psychology from the pulpit, you got to find another church. I mean, that's, you know, mm-hmm. you're from a Calvary Chapel. I always know, you know, we used to go to a church in California for Christmas. My parents came out, and it just got to be embarrassing to be there because it was, you know, four reasons why we still celebrate Christmas, and
yeah.
or the eight ways that the Bible is going to take stress out of your life.
Yeah.
And you know, these cherry-picked half, you know, scripture verses used to make the point of a pastor's sermon. And, you know, we started going to Big Chuck's church, and you always know he's going to read the Bible and try to interpret it to the best of his ability.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what I like about constitutionalists.
Mm.
They don't try to say what they think the Constitution should have said. They try to interpret what the Constitution actually does say. And that's what I love about Chuck. You know, he stands up there and says, this is what I believe the Bible is trying to say. You look at it from the Greek, from Hebrew, mm-hmm. you know, from the Aramaic languages, and you know that that's what you're going to get. If it's just pop psychology, you know, from a pulpit, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. I want to dive back into your book that I'm
you
talking about.
You just threw me up a soapbox. You just got my hot buttons going.
Well, good, good. I want to do that. That's what this is all about. But
yeah.
Because the book, the way it's laid out, you have some pretty straightforward, I'll put it this way, you're bold, you're not afraid to say it like it is, and you're telling us to be the same, that we shouldn't be afraid about the truth. And there's
yeah.
a couple of statements that you make I want you to expound on. In your
sure.
book, you say it's time to get off the fence. And then you explain something like this, to come out of the darkness of political correctness into the light, peace, freedom of the truth. Expand on that. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having an opinion of knowing what you believe and why you believe it. That's what the Christian worldview is. A worldview is your belief system. It's what you base your life on, your decisions on, things like that. I teach at a camp all summer long called The Summit. I'll put a plug in for them. It's called Summit, Summit Ministry, summit.org, and they teach Christian worldview. They teach why you believe what you believe as a Christian, and they do it from all points of view. They talk about moral relativism, they talk about communists, they talk about socialists, they talk about the New Age movement, you know, that kind of a thing. And they talk about Christianity and how our belief system all flow in the same direction. The things I believe about economics and politics and sociology and psychology and theology all go in the same direction. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's good for you. It's good for your brain. It's good for your body. It's good for your life. It's good for your eternal life and your soul. And that's why, you know, that fence riding, try not to offend anybody. Christianity is offensive. It's always been offensive.
Mm.
You know, you were born into sin. I got a 3.5-year-old who I would literally lay my life down for without thinking twice about it. And he has a sin nature. He just wants to do bad. He was born that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to die to yourself and repent of our wrongdoing and ask Christ to come in our life and the Holy Spirit to fill us up so that we stop behaving that way, and that's getting off the fence.
I just found it. I just found Summit on my iPad. I just went to it on the website. That's great.
Oh, now you're making me jealous. I'm waiting until the 3G comes out.
Okay, good.
I'm waiting until that one comes out, but I'm definitely all over that. Listen, I want to put another point in there, though, because a lot of people misinterpret Be Intolerant, the book. You know, I'll go and speak on that subject, and I'll have some guy come up and be like, I'm just like you, man. I'm intolerant of all those idiots. And it's like, nope. I just feel like going, no, you're the person I wrote this book for. Because there's a way to go about talking to people. We've got to show people respect.
Mm-hmm.
If you're mean, why would anybody want to listen to you?
Right.
If you're making fun of people or being derogatory or disrespectful, that type of thing, I'm going to not listen to you just because you're mean.
In fact, I think I think some people get into apologetics just because it gives them sort of a license to be mean, and they go about it in a mean-spirited way instead of defending the faith with grace.
That's right. It's funny that you mentioned that because that's one of the classes I teach at Summit. I teach how to be a Christian conservative and not a jerk. And the way I do that is explain there's a huge, huge difference between a debate and a conversation. You have conversations with your friends. You debate people that want to debate. If your friend wants to have a debate, that's fine. But if it gets mean-spirited or, you know, like when Richard Dawkins comes over and debates, you know, a creation theory person, it's called a debate. You're there to win. You're there to make the other person lose and not ever want to debate you again. That's what you're there for. You should be loaded for bear. You should come with big guns and Marines and snipers and all that kind of stuff in your back pocket. That's what a debate is. If you're having a conversation with a person, you're not there to hurt their feelings. You're not there to put them down or to be derogatory or sarcastic or snarky. It's a conversation. It's supposed to be a two-way street where you're listening to what the other person is saying and contemplating that, and then you're talking and they're talking. That's what the difference is. And so often, you know, and this I teach the course because that was me. Mm-hmm. I was the angry conservative in college, and I would just beat people up with my knowledge, and I was a huge jerk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back, and I'm like, how embarrassing that I not only was behaving that way, but I called myself a Christian while behaving that way.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, you have a chapter entitled A Broken Philosophy, and you're talking about moral relativism. And so part of the teaching of the worldview is to show how bankrupt other worldviews are. What do you mean when you say moral relativism is a broken philosophy? Because it seems like everybody is bought into it.
Well, it just doesn't work. You know, the all roads lead to heaven doesn't work. That clearly isn't getting people to heaven. You know, doctors, this is an interesting thing. My dad wrote a book called Dare to Discipline, and it was released the day I was adopted into my family on August 31st, 1970. And the leading theory at the time was by a man named Dr. Spock, not the Star Trek guy, but an actual doctor. And his philosophy was the exact opposite of Christianity, that we're all born good.
Yes, correct.
That you're born with a good nature and you're a good person and parents don't need the discipline, you don't need timeouts, you don't need spankings, no corporal punishment, no rules, just let your children grow and learn and they're going to grow up fine. And he came out years later and said, I made a huge mistake. You are going to ruin your kids if you do this. This is a bad idea. That book is still for sale today. People still buy it, and they still raise their kids on philosophies and principles that the author has come out and said are wrong. I mean, you got to ponder that for a minute. I have a truck I work on all the time, and it's got a 327 V8 from a 1966 Chevelle in it.
Nice.
Can you imagine if I got a Hayes manual, which is a popular mechanics manual, and I was working on my truck, and I got a recall notice from Hayes. And they say, hey, listen, we messed up. The manual is wrong, and it's going to blow your engine. You're going to throw a rod. You're going to seize your engine if you keep following this. And I go, you know what? But I like the way this manual sounds. I still think I'm going to just, you know, work on my truck that way anyway. I mean, I'd be considered a moron among mechanics.
Good point.
And yet parents read that book, follow that philosophy, and ruin kids left and right, even though the author came out and said it's wrong.
Ryan, you touched on something that I was actually going to ask you about, so I'm going to throw it in right now.
Sure.
You have said that if people between the ages of 18 and 40 got spanked when they were younger, that you're the one to blame.
Yeah,
explain
probably.
That. Explain that one.
Probably. You know, my dad's a corporal punishment person. He spanked. You know, I got spanked when I was little. My sister got spanked. I don't apologize for it because I spanked my own son. And you know what? It works.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, is it for everybody? I don't know. Maybe. It depends on what your kid does. You know, it's interesting. My wife grew up in a very different household than mine. you know, just a different household than mine. No corporal punishment, no spankings, things like that. So for her, it's really difficult. You know, I mean, it just tears her up inside to do that. And while I understand it, I still think she ought to spank Lincoln every now and then. You know, it's one of those things. I came home from a trip the other day. This is like seriously 3 weeks ago. And he's behaving. No, what happened? What was he doing? He was acting up for something. He was getting kind of snarky with her. And she goes, Lincoln, do you want sassy sauce? And he just like, he was like, nope. And just cleaned up the attitude, put on a smile on, like started behaving. And I'm looking at her and him and I was like, what the heck is sassy sauce? And she goes, it's vinegar. Oh. And I go, and what do you do with it? And she's like, I dip his binky in, his pacifier in it, and I put it in his mouth, and he hates it.
Who wouldn't?
I'm like, no way, are you kidding? And I'm not kidding. We have a totally different kid around her because she's kind of, you know, I'm the iron fist. I grew up in a household that was that way. So I just don't have a problem with it. You know, when he acts up and he, you know, misbehaves, I'll put him in his room. And if it's really bad, I give him a swat. You know, it's sure. Just not that big of a deal for me. But it was hard for her. And she has turned that kid around. I mean, he respects her and he obeys her and he, you know, it's what we do. It's what the Holy Spirit does with us. It's correction. And the Bible says, if the Lord, the Lord only corrects those he loves.
Hmm.
I mean, think about that. You gotta ponder that thought. He only corrects those he loves. Therefore, I love my son so much that I correct him when he's wrong because I want him to grow up and be a success. Yes. I want him to grow up and know the Lord. I want him to grow up and have a work ethic. I want him to grow up and have financial security.
Right.
You know, those types of things. If I didn't love him, who cares?
You're not thinking about his temporal feelings. You're thinking about all the way down the road and what it's going to pay off to be.
That, you know what? I just want him to go to heaven. You know, I really do. I want him to know the Lord. I want him to know the Lord like I do now.
Mm.
You know, I meet kids that just have a passionate relationship for the Lord at such a young age, and I think, man, that's just amazing. I mean, think of what they're going to do. You know, there's a group called Crochet Kids International. It's spelled with K's. And the president is 23 years old, and they went over to Uganda and taught 10 women how to crochet hats, and they ship yarn over. And the women crochet hats, and they send them back to the U.S., and they sell them here, and they send all the money back to Uganda for poverty over there. And then they diversified, and they work with alpaca farmers and local yarn makers so that all the money stays in that area. They've got now three or four different countries in different places in the world where they're making a difference for poverty. The kid's 23 years old. I mean, can you imagine what he's going to do at 60 and 70? I mean, the impact he will have made. And if you can teach your kids about the Lord early and get them excited and get them involved and get them on mission trips and, you know, man, have that life change, there is no telling what they're going to do later in life.
Hmm. Let's just speak about later in life when they're growing up and in college. What do you see today in college kids? Do you see a spiritual hunger among students?
Oh, yeah, I think so. It depends. You know, I think, yes, the answer is yes. I see a spiritual hunger. The problem is the other side, the people that don't believe in the Bible and don't have a Christian worldview have gotten so good at dismantling unprepared Christians.
Yes.
That in their search for knowledge, they're often just steered right off the rails. Mm. And they come back from college not believing the Bible and believing it's a fairy tale and having all kinds of information that's going to hurt them later in life.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's and it's I'll be honest, Skip, it's our fault.
Yes.
You know, it's just our fault for not, you know, for making church entertainment.
I agree.
For making it just fun time for little kids.
Yeah.
And not teaching them this is why we follow the Word of God.
Mm-hmm.
It will work the rest of your life in all aspects, in all areas of your life. You will always do better by following the Lord than following anything else. And because we've stopped teaching kids that, and churches have virtually erased it out of their curriculum, when your kids go to college and they get a professor who hates the Lord and hates Christians and, you know, thinks that we're delusional because we believe in a fictitious character, just like if we were adults that believed in Santa Claus, it's a dangerous place for kids today.
In fact, Ryan, I think if you took the average high schooler going into college, they wouldn't be able to even define postmodernism, and they're gonna go into a cauldron of vocal students who have memorized Dawkins and Hitchens on, and if they're not prepared with what's out in the pop culture, they're gonna go down quick, huh?
It's true. It's true. And listen, Dawkins and Hitchens are going to travel around
yep.
and make fun of Christians and say seemingly really smart things. And it's, you know, and they, listen, I was watching a comedian the other day, and he said, I'm not that smart, but I read really smart people. You know, I've got friends that are like, dude, I didn't come from a monkey. I come from Jesus. I know it. And he's like, how do you know? You're 30. How smart can you be? And I was laughing along. I'm like, you know, that's kind of funny. Okay, you know. And he goes, listen, they mapped the human genome out. And it turns out that humans are 96% compatible with a chimp. That's a big percentage. He's like, if I gave you a sandwich and it was 96% dog poo and 4% ham, would you call it a ham sandwich? That sounds a little bit vulgar, and I apologize for that. But I started laughing, and it made me so sad, and it made me laugh so hard because I thought, what an amazingly, brilliantly put point.
Yes.
I mean, it was a fantastic way for an atheist to put it.
Yes.
And I looked it up, and it's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's also true that we're 50% compatible with a banana. It doesn't make me half banana.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make me grow a yellow skin and have delicious white fruit on the inside. It means that when you break people down to the molecular level, everything's made of the same stuff.
Yes, right.
There's a great scientific answer for that, but I thought, why can't Christians be funny?
Right.
You know, why do we get mean when we get humor? Why can't we have a Daily Show or a Colbert Report or have stand-up comedians that talk about things like that in a way that's funny and humorous? And isn't just, you know, cutting and mean. I mean, I know
right.
there's talented people out there. Why
right.
won't we do that?
Right. In fact, I would even ask the atheist why he thinks the guy who mapped the human genome is now a believer.
Yeah.
And
isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. What a great story he has.
Yeah. That is fantastic. I had on my radio show, I had Mike Adams on. He's from University of Wilmington, North Carolina. And he was an atheist up until about 5 years ago, and he came on, and he is just, I mean, he's got a great story, and it's just a neat thing to talk about how the Holy Spirit can transform lives.
That's it. He transforms lives. And, you know, people hearing you today speak and hearing this conversation or reading your book, they might post you as somebody who's radical. But it seems to me that you're a normal Christian who believes what the Bible says, and you want to articulate it and teach others to do that. And so let's you know, because you teach these things at Summit, etc. Give an encouragement to young people about taking spiritual adventures. What would you say to that?
You know, here's the thing: people call me a radical, and the truth is, they're right. I am. I'm a complete loon when it comes to that stuff, but I'm not mean. It's so odd that you rarely find someone that's willing to go out and engage culture and talk to people. I got to be honest, it's so much harder to be nice. It's so much easier just to be right and then to be smug about it. There's this really radical gay website, and I get Google alerts when my name is mentioned and on the internet, and I got a mention from this one. I went to it, and it was really mean. It was just... So they called my dad older than dirt, and they just tore my dad down, which always upsets me because, I mean, if you want to say something about me, I don't really care. It's no big deal. But family, I'm kind of particular about. but then he put something like, you know, oh, when, you know, Dr. Dobson dies, you know, these old, you know, cranky Christians aren't going to listen to Ryan because he's too cool. We get it. You're too cool. And made some snarky comment about me. And I thought, you know what? I wonder why you're saying this. And so I emailed the guy. I posted a comment, and I gave him my actual email address. And I said, you know, I keep hearing this comment from people that don't like me that I'm too cool. And I don't understand where you're coming from in that. Is it because I'm 39 and my dad's 74 and we have different interests and tastes and we don't dress the same? Does that make me too cool? You know? And I said, is there any chance that you and I could have a conversation via email that won't turn into name-calling and meanness and disrespect? I mean, are there questions you'd like to ask me, and I'll give you an honest and open answer, and then maybe I could ask you a question, and you give me an honest and open answer? Is there any chance of that? I mean, because I'm totally up for it if you are.
Good for you.
And he didn't answer for like 3 weeks, and yesterday I got an email back from the guy, and he says, listen, someone posted claiming they're you, saying that you're open for a conversation. if you are, I'm up for it too. And I can't believe it. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Wow.
And so I have no idea where this is going. I mean, it might turn out to be a disaster and, you know, who knows?
Yes.
But I figure, why not?
Yes.
You know, I mean, let's talk about gay marriage and why I think it's bad for America and you think it's good for America via email so that, you know, we don't yell and we don't get sarcastic and we don't get our feelings hurt, or at least we try not to. And maybe we have a conversation. Maybe I don't come across as being, you know, some mean religious fanatic, although I am a religious fanatic, and we have an open conversation and we get to talk to each other and listen. I mean, who knows? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's what we've got to do. As Christians, we're supposed to be going for the high road, you know, and holding your tongue even when the other person's being mean. I mean, and it's such a bummer. I being mean is so easy, and
yes,
being right is so easy. Oh, and it's fantastic to be right, and then you get to be smug and prideful and, you know, all those great things, but it doesn't win any hearts to Christ.
Right. You win an argument and you lose a person.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that terrible? Wouldn't it be great if you could win an argument and then the person would just instantly become a Christian? Oh, it would make life so much easier.
You know, you hit on a topic. You talk about engaging the culture.
Today,
especially among those who are younger, extreme sports, X Games are huge.
Sure.
How can we do a better job implementing some of these things to promote Christ?
Oh, you know, that's the funny thing. My parents used to get, well, I used to get the question all the time growing up. I started skateboarding when I was about 5 years old. I still do. I'm going to turn 40 in July, and I'll have been skateboarding for 35 years.
Ryan, I'm 54, and I still skateboard. No joke.
Yeah, I love it. You know, my goals have changed. My goal is to not limp when I go back to
yeah.
my truck. After
I go time. Slow now, but I...
Yeah,
but
I just
go
to have fun. I go with my son. You know, he's 3 and a half. I put him in a helmet, and we ride skateboards and, you know, that kind of stuff. The first thing is, it's not wrong. You know, I got that question all the time. Will you ride a skateboard? What do your parents think about that? And that question actually means, I think skateboarding's wrong, and your parents let you skateboard. Why do they do that?
Yes.
You know, that's really what that question meant. It would be like, well, you wear black T-shirts. What do your parents think about that? So I wouldn't let my kids do that. It was that kind of a thing. And so you get guys that ride freestyle motocross, and they wear their hair funny, and they look a little bit different. Kyle Loza comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what a great kid.
Uh-huh.
Loves the Lord, goes to Saddleback Church, you know, has won X Games gold medals like 3 years in a row. He's just a good kid. You know, he's like 20 years old. He risks his life for his sport,
yep,
and he had a good time at it, and he's a good witness to people. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, my parents didn't prohibit me from hurting myself when I was growing up. You know, that's part of our politically correct society, man. Everybody's got to be in a helmet with pillows wrapped around them so they don't, you know, scrape. And, you know, you can't play tag in most schools in America. Kids might fall and get a bloody knee. It's like, well, that's what kids do, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, my son's trying to climb the tree in the backyard, and I was like, Lincoln, the branch is going to break. And he's like, no, it won't. And the branch broke, and he fell on his back and knocked the air out of himself, and he got, you know, he cried. And I was like, Steve, the branch broke. I hugged him and picked him up and helped him, but he's going to hurt himself. There's nothing you can do about that. So, I mean, if your kid has a predilection for skateboarding, let him skateboard.
Yes.
You know what my parents did? You want to know the big difference with my parents and other parents? They knew I was going to do it. And so they just said, hey, if you and your friends want to skate at the house, come skate in the backyard. We had a huge concrete slab in our backyard. We put ramps up. We made tons of noise. We played loud music. We yelled at each other. And they were like, you know, loudness isn't a sin. It's just annoying. But we'd rather you be here where we know you're okay than out in the street somewhere doing who knows what with people we don't know.
Great.
And so, I mean, my house was the go-to place all the time. I had Jeff Myers on my radio program last week, and their kids wanted, I don't know, Xbox or something for Christmas. And they were like, we're not buying you Xbox. They're like, but everybody gets Xbox. And they're like, well, we're not doing that. But we will buy you any outdoor activity sporting equipment that you want.
Hmm.
And they've got a trampoline, and they've got, I mean, all that kind of stuff. Well, it ends up all the neighborhood kids want to come to their house now because they've got all this cool stuff. They can actually go outside and play.
Yes.
And then that's how my parents kept track of me. I was at the house all the time. My friends were over all that. They stocked the fridge. They didn't care if we ate everything or drank all the soda or whatever it was or made noise in the backyard. At least I was in a place where there was people that cared about us, people that loved me with stuff that I wanted to do. And that's what I tell parents, man. Just your kids are going to get hurt. It's no big deal. Stitches heal, and girls like scars.
Ryan, I hear a theme coming through all that you're telling me. You're passionate about showing how relevant Jesus is for a contemporary culture.
Yeah.
And so in that, give me your view. What arenas, what fronts, where do you see Jesus moving today?
You know, this is the interesting thing. I see him moving with personality types. There's a personality type that is very, very authentic and is really seeking the Lord. And I see Christ really setting people on fire for people that are looking in the mirror and saying, what is it that I can change about myself? And how can I reach those around me for Christ? Huh. If it makes me uncomfortable, then I'll be uncomfortable. If it makes me nervous and scared, I'm going to be nervous and scared. But whatever it is, today I'm going to wake up and I'm going to try to make a difference.
Huh.
And you see it in kids like Zach Hunter. I mean, he's 18. He's written 3 books. He started Loose Change to Loosen Chains, the abolition movement. And then somebody else took credit for it, and he didn't care. He was like, whatever, you know, it's helping people. I'm like, well, yeah, but you started that.
Hmm.
He's like, yeah, Ryan, but people are being helped.
Hmm.
I mean, that's think about that from an 18-year-old standpoint. He created
so mature.
A worldwide movement. And doesn't care that somebody else takes credit for it.
Wow.
Because people are being helped. And he's like, that's why I did it. He's like, who cares, you know? And I was like, wow, that's, I mean, I don't know if I would have that maturity. I hope I would. But at the same time, I probably wouldn't. I'd be like, no, no, that was me. I started that. Isn't that cool? I did that. But that's not what the Lord asked him to do. He's like, the Lord just asked me to make a difference, and that's what I'm doing. I'm making a difference. He didn't say, you know, make a difference and get credit for it.
That's
you know,
good.
There's the authentic people out there, and you see that in young and old alike. You see it in, you know, I do a radio program that's for, I mean, I say the 20 to 50 crowd, but early on I had a guy that was 78 years old that listened, you know, just religiously to my podcast when I was only podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
And he emailed me and he's like, you know, I love your show. I love what you're doing. I don't like all the music you play, but everything else I love. And I was like, awesome. That's totally cool.
Now, tell us a little bit about that radio program. Is it a daily? Is it an internet radio program? What is it?
It is. I run internet radio because I can afford it. It's real cheap, and I get to be nationwide. Well, actually, I get to be worldwide. I'm
sure.
In all 50 states, and quarter one of this year, I'm in 113 countries, and we pull in about 300,000 to 375,000 downloads or listens a month.
No kidding.
Yeah, depending on if the month has 4 or 5 weeks in it. And I do it every day. I record live 3 days a week, and then we play pre-recorded stuff twice a week. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 3 o'clock Mountain, I do a live radio show.
Okay.
It's fun.
Tell us how do we get it? What are the...
Oh, go to RyanDobson.com and click on links.
Okay.
Or Core Ministries. My ministry is Core Ministries, K-O-R Ministries. But the city I do it out of is Castle Rock, and it's on Castle Rock Radio.
Huh.
It's not a Christian station. Dennis Miller is our morning guy.
Huh.
But, you know, it's kind of destination radio, so
sure.
They made me a great offer, and I took it.
Great.
My friend Sean Hewlin, it's funny because I work for my dad now. I'm going to be 40 in a couple of months, and this is the first time I've ever worked directly for my dad. And I talked him into hiring one of my best friends in the world, my business partner. His name's Sean. We were college roommates together. Sean's the reason why I got on the radio and, like, all these things that I'm doing. I like to talk. You know, I'm not a big business person, but, you know, I love the Lord, and I love talking about the Lord, and Sean kind of was in my life and was like, I'm just going to help you out. And I was like, all right, you know, and just worked out the deal. And he was like, I think internet radio is going to be good for you. And I was like, okay. And then a year later, we were pulling in 250,000 listeners. And then 3 months after that, it's almost 400,000. So, and now we both work for my dad. So,
Now, speaking of that, you're starting a new program with your dad. Is that right?
Yes.
Tell us about that. We're interested in that.
Yeah. My dad,
And just in case our listeners who just tuned in don't know what we're talking about, you're Ryan Dobson. Your dad is Dr. James Dobson. Okay, take it away.
Right. Yep. Well, he's no longer at Focus on the Family. They are now led by Jim Daly, and they're doing what God is calling them to do. And we started a ministry called Family Talk. The website is myfamilytalk.com, which we kind of like. You know, it's kind of a personal, you know, it's like, it's my family talk. This is, you know, we want everybody to be a part of it. You get to be part of, you know, our ministry. And he's got a new radio program called Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson. And, you know, I was early on, he was talking about starting this new ministry, and I had, you know, gotten my 501c3, and it was just such a headache. It was such a hassle that I thought, you know, you've done enough. you don't need to have the hassles of figuring out how to make a website or set up the network in your office and, you know, all those things. I just said, if there's anything I can do to make your life easier, you let me know. And he was like, okay, you know, and I said, listen, we'll start up a PayPal account. We'll, you know, we'll do a Facebook page and we'll start the website and we'll do these things. And he was like, sure, you know, okay. And I just wanted to help out in that way. And then jokingly, at that time, it was fall, it was the hunting season, and I, you know, in the fall I shave my head and I grow my beard out. It's just laziness. And my wife likes the beard. And I had grown this huge Grizzly Adams, you know, bushy beard, and I was teasing him one day because my parents weren't fans of the beard. And I was like, hey, I'll tell you what, when you start your new radio program, if you hire me as your co-host, I'll shave off my beard. And he was like, ah, oh, okay, that's funny. And then he hired me as his co-host and made me shave my beard.
That's great. What a great
and
story.
And then we've got Luann Crane, who is the third co-host or tri-host, however you want to say it. Luann's been a working mom and a stay-at-home mom. She was a producer for my dad for 25 years. And you'll understand how unique this is. Before doing the radio shows that we're doing now, Luann has done, I think, three total radio programs. She was always behind the glass. And I'm sure you've had bad interviewees and interviewers over the years. Luann is amazing. I mean, she has got a great voice. You like to listen to her. She speaks from wisdom and knowledge, and she's very gracious. And I'm sitting in there recording programs, and I thought, you know what? It's just not fair that you're this good with no practice. Like, this is what I do every day. She's amazing. And the three of us together, when you start hearing programs, there's two or three programs up on the website right now because the radio show debuts on May 3rd. But you can download some of the stuff that we've done, and there's a different energy in my dad's voice. You
Beautiful.
Know, at 73, he started a brand new ministry in a brand new direction doing this show, and you can hear the excitement in his voice. It's really, really fun to watch.
Yes, great. Well, we're going to, I just was informed on May 3rd, we're going to start it down here on KNKT in Albuquerque, so we can't wait to hear that.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, listen, I'm telling you, the first week is going to blow you away. It will. I mean, we've been recording them, and it's like they're so emotional and they're energy charged. And if it's not in a local station, we're going to do it on the internet as well. And if you miss a day, you can download it via iTunes on the podcast. It'll be there. You know, Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson. We really want people to hear this. We want them to be able to hear it wherever they're at. But when you hear my dad, it's so funny to see how much energy he's got now. He's so excited for the future. And I was talking to him a couple months ago, and I said, you know, Pop, a lot of people followed you here. They had careers and jobs, and they were getting paid, and they had insurance and all that kind of stuff. And we've got this brand new startup ministry. And he was like, yeah. And I said, you know, you're about to turn 74. You know, where are you going to be in 10 years? Are you going to do this when you're 84 years old? Do you see that? You know, and he goes, Ryan, all my life, people keep asking what my 5-year plan, what my 10-year plan is. 5 years ago, I didn't know I'd start this ministry, but 5 years ago, I knew I'd follow God wherever he led. You want to know what my 5-year plan and my 10-year plan is? To follow God. It's done me well so far for the last, you know, 33 years of Focus on the Family, and, you know, before that, you know, 36 years when he started following the Lord at, you know, age 3. He goes, oh, it's always served me well. I'm going to follow God. How about that? And I was like, you know what? That sounds like a good plan. I sat back thinking, what? That's a great 5-year plan. Follow God and wherever he leads. And that's what he's doing today.
You call it My Family and MyFamilyTalk.com, the website. Speaking of your family, I want you to tell us, because it'll fit right in. What do you think about adoption? Give us your background and speak to us and the listeners about the opportunities.
Oh, I love it. It's a fantastic. I mean, all of us are adopted in the family of God. I mean, that's how we got here. Last night, I was in Savannah, Georgia, doing a fundraiser for an adoption home, and it's because I was adopted. My birth mom was actually 16, and she was single, and her boyfriend left her when she was pregnant, and she didn't know what to do. And somebody pointed them to the doors of an adoption agency and a home crisis pregnancy center, and she got help there with her and her family. And at that time, my parents weren't able to have kids on their own anymore, and they adopted me. I was 6 weeks old on August 31st, 1970. I was born on July 12th, and I was adopted into the family. So I'm a huge, huge advocate. I've got, 4 adopted nieces and nephews. My co-host, Andy Brainer, lives in Durango. He's got 2 kids from Rwanda. I tell you what, adoption, international, domestic, whatever, will, this is a corollary, I think will do more to end racism than almost anything else. My son Lincoln doesn't know that other families don't have black kids because he doesn't see skin color. I mean, he knows that he's got black cousins and he's got white cousins, but he doesn't know why. He just knows that's normal. That's what's normal for him. That Andy, when we go out to his camp and hang out with his family, he has black kids and white kids. You know, and if we were to adopt, he wouldn't think that's odd. He wouldn't think it's weird to have a black brother or a black sister, you know, or brown or different color or different hair, all that kind of stuff. It's just how he is. And he'll grow up that way. I don't think he's ever going to have a racist bone in his body because it doesn't make any sense to him.
Oh, beautiful. That is beautiful. Ryan, you have a new book, I think, coming out. Is it called Humanitarian Jesus?
I do.
So
I do.
Is that released yet? When is that going to be released? What's it about?
It comes out May 1st. Actually, they're shipping me my first copies right now, so I'm hoping to get one any day now. I can't wait to see it. You know, humanitarianism is a big thing that's going on in our churches and our country around the world right now, especially with Haiti and with Katrina and things like that. And we kind of go over the topic of, is doing good good enough? It's the social gospel. Is, you know, Habitat for Humanity on its own building houses, is that fine on its own, or is it missing something by not having a gospel component to it?
Fascinating.
Tons of interviews in the book. We've got Franklin Graham. We've got the president of Salvation Army. We've got Alex Chang. We've got Franklin Graham. We've got Tony Campolo. People from all walks of life and all, you know, points of view. Surfrider Foundation President Jay Moriarty talking about humanitarian aid and the gospel, and does it work apart from each other?
Beautiful.
You know, it's like doing missions work without helping people. Is that working, or do you need to be helping people while you do missions work as well?
Franklin Graham's a close personal friend, so I know how he's going to answer that and some of the things he's going to say. That'll be a great read, and it's just in time for your radio launch.
It is. It is. It's just in time for the radio launch. You know, it is a good read. It's interesting. You know, Christian Buckley is who I wrote it with. He was a board member for Core Ministries for a bunch of years. Really came, you know, I've known Christian for a long time, but we met up in Hawaii, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago when I was considering getting out of the ministry. I kind of got burned out and I'd done too much in a short amount of time. And I was just thinking maybe this wasn't the career path for me. It wasn't, you know, the job for me. And my wife was at Starbucks up on the North Shore and heard someone go, "Laura?" And she turned around and he was like, "What are you doing here?" And he and I started having breakfast and he just reminded me what it was to love the Lord and to love what you do and why I was doing it. And it just energized me to get back into the ministry full time and just have a different viewpoint in it. And so we've been doing stuff together for a bunch of years now. And he came to me with this project. He's a lawyer in California, and the first part of the book is a historical look at humanitarianism and the gospel. And it sounds dry, but it's not. It grabs you right from the get-go about the history of humanitarian aid and the church. And then we go into the interview section. Interview section you can't put down. I mean, it's just every person you read gets more fascinating and more fascinating. So, I had a small part to do in the book, but I believe in it so much that I just can't wait for people to read it.
Ryan, I had the opportunity to meet your dad at the White House a couple times through the years. You spoke for us at Ocean Hills. You spoke for us here at Albuquerque. I just appreciate you, your ministry, and your passion for what you do. It really comes across.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys. You know, I always love doing it. I love coming to your churches because I know you're going to have good people that are willing to hear a word from the Lord. And it just never disappoints. Every time I get to do stuff with you guys, it's always exciting.
And thanks for doing this interview. Great to be with you, Ryan.
You too. I appreciate it.
God bless.
You too.
Bye-bye.